Welcome to VIP Spotlight for September 2019. To kick off our fall season, our special guest is Susie B. from Tennessee. Now, here is our host, Teresa Rose.
Everyone to VIP Spotlight for the month of September. And our VIP of the month of September is our own Susie Barnes. Welcome, everyone, and welcome, Susie.
Well, thanks, Teresa Rose. And now I'll say hello to everyone. I figured I would save my voice for the next hour.
I am proud to introduce Susie Barnes. She was born on September the 11th, 1947. And she lives in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Again, Susie, congratulations on being September's VIP of the month.
Well, thanks. This is a treat for me. And like I told you, you obviously had run out of material, but I'm always glad to fill in.
Okay, Susie, we're going to start out with where you were born. Tell us about where you were born and raised.
Well, I actually was the first of my gang to be born in the hospital in Murfreesboro, but essentially born and raised in Milton, Tennessee. It's a little rural community on, I don't know what eastern edge of Rutherford County it is, and for the most part, I've always lived in Rutherford County. I don't know, what else did you ask me about except was I born and raised?
I ask about where you were born and raised. Tell us about your parents and your siblings.
Well, my mother was a homemaker, and boy, does that ever involve a lot of stuff where she was concerned. She raised a huge garden, and after the boys grew up, she milked a few cows and was a wonderful cook, could whip up a meal in 45 minutes out of nothing. Wonderful seamstress, good sense of humor. That improved as she got older. My dad was hurt badly in a construction accident when I was five and ran a little country store for about 5 years and then was able to go back to construction work and built houses for 25 years and then retired. We lived on a farm, 52-acre farm, in Milton, and I'm very lucky to have had really good parents. We were poor, but I don't know that I ever knew it, that we were poor, because everybody else around us was like it. We never lacked for anything, and there were a whole lot of kids.
So how many brothers and sisters did you have, Susie, or do you have?
Four older brothers and a younger sister. I now have one brother and one sister, and the oldest and the youngest. So Charles is 85, and Becky is 63. She's 63.
Susie, tell us, were you born blind, or did you go blind later in life?
No, I was born sighted, and when I was in second grade, actually it was in February, I got sick, and first, let me tell you about Milton. Milton was a little small community, but we did have a little doctor's office, and a doctor from Murfreesboro came there once a week, and we had a nurse there in Murfreesboro, kind of like Mayberry, not really. We didn't have an Andy, but anyway, he checked me, and I had strep. Not a real bad case of it, but I did have strep. And my mom did, too. Well, he told her to, maybe she did. Anyway, he said, keep her at home this next week, and if she's not better, I'll see her next week. Well, I wasn't, and then they took me to the clinic in Murfreesboro, and there they did a spinal tap, and I had spinal meningitis and was in the hospital. Well, I didn't see well after they did that first tap, but then I got my vision back, and so I was in the hospital for 3 weeks, and it was a 50-50 go for a few days as to whether, you know, I would make it or not. And the people we knew that had meningitis that survived it were deaf, and that never would have worked for me because I enjoy talking entirely too much. And I was paralyzed from neck down, just my arms worked. My arms, my mouth, and my eyes were all that worked. And so, anyway, after 3 weeks, the paralysis was gone. And, well, the paralysis was gone in about a week and a half. And after 3 weeks, I went home and hadn't learned how to walk all over again and, you know, that kind of stuff. And I'd actually gone to get a polio shot at school. The health nurses at that time, and we're talking about, I guess this was 55, would come to the schools and give the shots, and the polio shot was just then being given. And that night I had I'd had really, really bad headaches anyway, but I had an extremely bad headache that afternoon, but got over it. And that night I was sitting in Daddy's lap reading a book. My brother Dennis brought home books every day for me because I just read all the time. And the light in the room became yellow because at that time a light bulb would begin to turn yellow before it would go out. And I looked up and I said, well, the light bulb's going to blow. Well, my daddy just had this almost deadly grip on me because he knew what was happening. And so that night I lost 96% of my vision, and the best it's ever been was that. And then gradually, as I've had more and more birthdays, then I've lost just about all of that.
So, Susie, did you actually lose your sight because of the spinal meningitis, or was it something else due to maybe a complication with the polio shot, or do they know exactly?
Yeah, they know. Daddy thought it was the polio shot, so he didn't allow me to take the next, you know, two boosters. But we had a young doctor who was just out of medical school, and he would pull down his medical books and study those. And so he called Daddy in, and he handed him one, turned to the page, and the inflammation was... there had been inflammation around the optic nerve as well. And as the inflammation went down, it cut the blood supply off, to the optic nerve. And so that's what caused it. It was the meningitis.
Susie, that must have been really hard for you, but even more so for your parents at that particular time, because they'd had a child that was very, very sick and they almost lost you. How did that affect your parents, and how did that affect the way they treated you at that time?
Well, being the only girl with a bunch of boys, I was already spoiled. So I don't think it changed a whole lot. They didn't sit me in a corner and poor, pitiful me. I would run in door facings and get a knot on one side, and one of them would say, well, next time, get it from the other direction, and that way you'll have them have matching ones. And one brother had a little tacky song he sung to me because while I was in the hospital, I had, you know, lost a lot of weight. My legs were skinny and white. I won't sing the little song for you. It was one at that time, and he just kind of changed some of the words. I think the toughest part was, let me back up. When Daddy had by that time he had opened up this little country store, and he was recuperating and I was recuperating, and he actually taught me how to recognize things by touching them. And we had this glass fronted candy case where all the candy bars were kept. You still had chips and peanuts and stuff sitting on top of this big case, but the main candy bars were in there. So when anybody would come in to get a candy bar, that was my job, because he had already taught me how to tell one from the other. The hardest ones, but I got it, was telling a Milky Way from a Snickers, because they were the same size, but there was just a little bit of, you could feel it through the package. And that happened years later when I was loading vending machines to distinguish some of the, you know, things, the difference in them. When we would go to town, he would put his hand on my shoulder, which was guiding me, but was always also helping him with his balance. So we were a pretty good team.
And what about your siblings at that time, Susie? Did they treat you differently or continue to treat you the same?
No, I don't know that they really treated me any differently. They might have. Charles particularly might have his hand on my shoulder to make sure I didn't, you know, run into something or get out of sync, or not out of the sink, but or miss a step or something. But I learned to really max that small amount of vision. Actually, years later, when I was in school, there were people that had no idea that I had as little vision as I had. Like I said, I just really maxed it. The most difficult thing was school, but because I had been at the top of the class when I left. I know when the teacher brought my report card down to the store to Daddy, he said, "Well, I guess Susie will be doing the second grade again next year." And she said, "Why, the rest of them have just now caught up with her." So I lost my smarts with the vision too, I think. But when I went back to school, we had a new teacher, and she actually had twins that were the age of me. They didn't go to school there, but I think because of that, she was really on the ball and tried to, you know, investigate anything that would help me. So I had large print books in the third grade and could read most of them. The only thing with large print books is that they were always an edition older than what the regular print books were. So she would have to, you know, kind of check to see what I needed to be working on. But the kids treated me so differently. Now, the boys didn't, but the girls, kids are just mean. And so my mom never knew until, years later, I would tell things that happened. And she said, "Why didn't you tell me that?" Well, if I'd gone home and told, that would have been like a tattletale. So,
Allison, 1 of 28.
Kids would say, "I'd rather be dead than blind," and I don't know what else, just mean tricks. And then in the fourth grade, I had strained my vision so much that I could no longer use large print books. So essentially, I just sat in class in the fourth grade. We had another teacher, and she was not a good teacher. Not just to me. I mean, she just really was not a good teacher. That was my last year in public school.
And that brings me to when you went to the school for the blind, Susie. And I know you had mentioned the fifth grade. So tell us a little bit about going to the school for the blind, what school you attended, and how did you feel that first year when you went?
Well, before we do that, we had, you know, my folks had been trying to find out if there was any way my vision could be improved. And we went to a group of ophthalmologists in Nashville. There were three of them, and each had their own specialty. One of being, now I can't remember what they're called, contact lenses. But anyway, the head of the department, he told Mama, he said, you all need to quit wasting your money and your time searching for a solution. He said, unfortunately, there's nothing that can be done. It's permanent. And so we knew about the School for the Blind because there was a man who lived around the road from us who had gone to the School for the Blind and ran the concession in the courthouse. But he was totally blind. So in our mind, blind was you saw nothing and I wasn't eligible. And she asked him, he said, I think that would be a wonderful idea and I'll make the contact. So a few weeks later, our church was having our summer meeting. That's what we called it. And a car came up and this man got out. And of course, I was the greeter, went out because I wasn't going to miss anything. And I told him that we were getting ready to go to the meeting. And he said, well, I'll come back in the morning. He was the principal from the School for the Blind. And so he brought me. I was so excited about the idea. I was going to learn Braille. I was going to learn how to read. And he brought me a Baptist Sunday School book. And, of course, it was just covered with dots. They were just all so close together. You couldn't tell where one started and the other one ended. And I just cried. I thought, I just wanted to learn how to read. Well, anyway, I went to School for the Blind. And remember, I was from the country, little country school. We didn't even have indoor plumbing at home. And here we go. And this huge building.
Allison, away 128.
All this glass and wide hallways and stuff. And you go to the dormitory and you have your own bed. You have your own dresser with five drawers in it instead of one drawer at home. You have your own closet. You have this bathroom you share with six girls. Well, six of you share. But I was homesick. And I guess I cried a little bit all week. I'm not sure. Well, I just look sad. But it was the first weekend I went home. Mom and I cried all weekend. And she wanted to sell the farm and move to Donaldson. And Daddy said, well, let's try it one more week. Well, by the next weekend, it was better. But I was lucky. I got to go home every weekend. But that first Sunday when they took me back, one reason I was upset on the weekend, too, was I thought I was supposed to learn how to read and write. Well, no Braille. No, you know, I was just in class. So when Mom and Daddy and one of my brothers and his wife took me back to school, they stopped by the superintendent's home that was there on campus. And my family was not demanding or anything. They were very mild-mannered. But Daddy just wanted to know why I hadn't started learning Braille. Well, the next morning when I went to class, and our fifth grade teacher had this red bookshelf right inside the door. So when I would come in and go down the hall, it really was the second door down this long hallway, but I looked for that red bookcase, so that was my landmark. But when that 8 o'clock bell rang, I don't know, for some reason, we always looked at the door. I don't know why, because we were already all in the room. And there stood the superintendent and this lady I'd never seen before. Well, she was the Braille teacher, and she was there to take me to Braille class. So I immediately started Braille, and just I was just like a sponge.
So, Susie, what was your, I'm sure that you went all the way through the School for the Blind through the 12th grade. Is that correct?
Yes. I started there in 57 and graduated in 65.
So what kind of hobbies or what were you in clubs? Did you have any other sports activities or anything at the School for the Blind that you were involved with?
I would like to say that I was athletic. I was not. I did learn how to bowl. We had a bowling alley and was on the bowling team, I guess, in fifth and sixth grade. But my big thing was music. I had finished Braille by Christmas, in fifth grade, but my fifth grade teacher didn't want me to leave it because normally people who came in that late didn't necessarily keep using Braille or didn't really have it well. Well, my teacher was confident, but she also was a piano teacher, so she taught me how to read piano music and sent me to the practice room and gave me a lesson after school a couple of days a week. So music was my big thing, and then when I would practice in the afternoon, I could hear the band. So some of that time, I was standing outside my door listening to this wonderful sound, and I got in band in seventh grade, and band was, although I liked playing the piano, I didn't like having to learn music, and we were about ready to start classical, and I didn't like classical music, but band was really my thing, and you may not ask any more questions about this, so I'll go ahead and stick it in. My junior and senior year, well, we had a band director who decided that some of us should audition for the All-State Band. And that was, they took the best of the people who auditioned, and I was in All-State Band my junior and senior. Junior year, I was an alternate, but by Christmas, they called me and said I would be in. And that was just a wonderful sound. And then my senior year, I got to student conduct, and that was just the most wonderful feeling conducting.
Susie, what instrument, or did you play an instrument in the band?
Oh, yeah, you had to play one in order to be there. I played clarinet.
That's what I thought, but you didn't specify the instrument. So you played the clarinet. Do you consider yourself a good clarinet player, and do you still play?
Well, no, I don't still play. I didn't have my own instrument. The school had instruments, so... Oh, I don't know, a few years later, I got a clarinet that wasn't much. And by that time, you had to practice every day to keep your lip on that. And my senior year, I had a wonderful sound. I couldn't play all those tricky, tricky things like some people can. But my sound was good. But I was, I was probably collectively practicing about 3.5 to 4 hours a day.
And to hear you speak about the piano and that you did not like classical, and to hear you play now, Susie, where did you pick the piano back up, and how did you become the accomplished pianist that you are today?
Well, do you want to know when I first started playing piano?
That would be good.
Well, I first started playing piano when I was about 3 years old. And I know you want to know, was it an upright? Well, no, it really wasn't. It was on our front steps. They were plank steps that, you know, had openings. And the top step was the piano, and the second step was my piano bench. And I could play anything. I doom de doom de doom. I was up and down the things. I went to the Church of Christ, but in the summer we went to Baptist Vacation Bible School, and I was just fascinated with this piano thing. So I could play church. I mean, we had piano music at our church, but we had communion every Sunday too. So I had a cracker on a saucer with a dish towel over it and a glass of water, so I could just pass that thing from side to side. Tell you what, a little girl with good imagination can spend a lot of time. But that was my first piano playing. But I started taking, well, lessons at the end of the fifth grade, but came home one weekend, and Daddy had, in sixth grade, and Daddy had gone and bought me a piano. So that piano was probably played as much as any piano could be played with you not being there, 5 days a week. But Daddy always said that he could tell if I was sad, mad, or happy as to how I played.
Susie, do you play by ear, or do you play with sheet music?
No, I play by ear. You asked me a while ago when it improved. After my kids were born, I have twins, and it was a great stress reliever. So I started trying playing different things, and that's when my piano playing began to improve.
Well, Susie, I love your playing, and you are a very accomplished pianist, and I love to hear you play. You have a lot to be proud of. Susie, before we move into further education, while we're still in your young childhood to your teens, what is your most fondest memory that you recall from your childhood?
Oh, I forgot to think about this one. Well, I don't really know.
Well, I enjoyed hearing how the steps was your piano bench and your piano. And that just made me smile. And I could just see this little girl sitting there playing her heart out on the step, Susie. So if I were you, that would be one of my fondest memories. So, Susie, after high school and you graduated, tell us a little bit about how you furthered your education.
Well, I went to school at Middle Tennessee State University, and it had just, that fall of 65 was the first time it had been called a university, and I thought it would be wonderful to stay at home. And Murfreesboro is what we call town. That's where you had to come to, you know, grocery shop or buy a new pair of shoes or whatever you did. So that's where MTSU is. And so I stayed home my first year. Daddy worked in town, and he would drop me off at school. And so, yeah, I finished in 9 semesters. I went 1 summer. I didn't know that we could string it out. My counselor told me I only had 4 years, so I believed him, and they were the one paying for it. When the counselor first came and talked to my dad about me going to school, he saw Department of Welfare on the top of that, and he just said no. And then the counselor, fortunately, he was very country, and
Allison,
so he didn't have to hunker down to our level. He was already there. He asked him, he said, "Mr. Perry, hadn't you always worked?" And he said, "Well, yes. And are you from a big family?" And of course, yes, he was. And hadn't you always wanted to get some of your tax money back? Well, of course, that's always a yes. And his thing was, "Well, let us send Susie to college on the taxes that you have paid back." So he signed on the bottom line. And so that's the way I went to school.
And Susie, what did you major in while you were in college?
Well, the only thing, you didn't have to have math in. I couldn't imagine doing math without a book that I could read. I majored in sociology, and I don't think I knew what that degree was, but when I went in, I thought I was going to be a social worker, and I thought a social worker was like the lady of My Little Margie, where she worked on this cruise ship. But I had a major in sociology and a minor in psychology and economics.
Okay, Susie, after your college, what career did you pursue when you finished college?
Well, I had a degree under my arm, and I thought that was supposed to be the ticket. Two things. I interviewed for counseling positions, and they all said, well, you know, with a degree in sociology, you'll have to work in the Department of Welfare or whatever. And none of these things panned out. There was an old lady. Well, there was a lady in Murfreesboro. She had actually helped me fill out my my course thing and chose the sociology for me. She had been a teacher at the university. And she met this guy on the street one day, and he was supervisor of vocational education and adult education. Anyway, he was under the county education department. And she wanted to know when he was going to hire Susan Perry Barnes. And he said, "Well, I don't know. Who's Susan Perry Barnes?" And so Sue started telling me about how I had just graduated from college and blah, blah, blah. And I could teach an adult education class. And then at the very end, she said, and by the way, she's blind. Well, I don't know if he called me up or she called me up, but anyway, no, he called me up and wanted me to come over and interview. So I went over and interviewed, and his secretary wanted to either not work in the summer or work half day. And of course, I needed job experience because people don't like to hire you if you don't have some kind of job experience. So he talked to me about teaching an adult class for the blind as well. They had just, adult education had just issued a grant for this purpose. And then he called me, I guess the next day, and he said, well, the way things are working now, you need to go down to the employment office and apply for this job. He said, they've got all of our jobs now coming through the employment office, but go on down there and fill out that application and talk to them, and then I'll call you tomorrow and we'll get you started to work. And that's the way it happened. And I went and took a two-week course. I worked afternoons as a secretary. And then I took a two-week course in Nashville for teaching an adult ed class for the blind, and that was the most comprehensive thing I have ever done in my life. 2 weeks, and my head was just swimming every day as we'd come out. But I did that for, well, let's see, that summer I taught two classes a week, and then later when I went to work for blind services, I initially taught two classes at night, and then after the kids were born, then I quit.
So let's talk a little bit about your children. Tell us a little bit about how many children you have, Susie. And you said that after your children were born that you quit. So were you a stay-home mom at that time for a while?
Yes, I had twins. I have a son and a daughter, Dawn and Sean. They're 44 now. And when I went to work for, well, I worked for the state 5 years. When I quit to have the kids. And I think by that time I was making $620 a month, and 25 of that had to go for my ride to Nashville. And then a lot of that had to go for getting a driver, because I worked 13 counties. And so anyway, I didn't make enough to pay the babysitter and my way to work. So I didn't have any choice except to be a stay-home mom. And I did that 11 years. After they got older, I joined all kinds of boards and committees and whatever just to get out of the house. And I was eligible for disability social security because of my blindness and my children. And I actually took a cut just to go back to work. And I went to work for the rehab center in Smyrna after that. But no, it was quite an adventure with two babies. We lived in a small house that was fine for a working couple, but we were stretching the walls, and we bought a little house that they had room to crawl and ride their little things around and around the house. And later we would take a cab to, you know, go for swimming lessons and take a cab to take Dawn for piano lessons. We used lots of cabs, and when they first started to school and they had to come home, I had this one cab driver I would call, and he would go and pick them up and bring them home. And the school thought he was their uncle.
Oh, how cute. Susie, what was it like being blind with the lack of vision that you had, having twins? Was that a challenge, or was it just something else you just overcome?
Well, it was a challenge, but I always said if I had three, I'd give two of them away because I had worked with two girls who were trying to have babies and couldn't. But I just had two, and a boy and a girl, so I kept both of them. And I didn't have any help. Well, except for that week after I came home, my mother-in-law came and stayed. But anyway, after that, I was on my own because my mom was doing a little job, making her a little money. And so Bob and I would fix formula every other night. So that took up the top shelf of the refrigerator, all that formula. But looking back, I'm not real sure how I did it, but we just did it. I could never stand on my head, but I tried doing about everything else to, be a good mom and to fit in. And my kids don't feel like they lacked anything of my poor vision. And I said, Mom, there wasn't ever anything that you said you couldn't do. You just did it. And I know when my daughter started cooking, and she's a really good cook, I said, how'd you learn to cook? She said, I just watched you, because I always cooked. So I don't know if that answers your question or not.
It does, Susie. I'm sure that your children had a wonderful upbringing because you were determined to make sure they had everything they needed. You should be very proud of that. Let's talk a little bit about, you said you went to work for the rehab. Let's talk a little bit about that and then go on into the vending part of your career, Susie.
Well, when I first started working, I worked for the rehab office in Nashville, the regional office, and I was a rehab teacher, and I went to people's houses, kind of beat the bushes to find blind people. So I work with people from the cradle to the coffin. I mean, that there was no breakdown of age there. Then after I was a stay-home mom, I went to work at the rehab center in Smyrna, Tennessee, and was started out as a instructor in the home management area, where you taught home management skills and kitchen skills, and then ended up being the Braille teacher as well. I worked there, I guess, 6 years, and I had a lot of clients I was getting them ready with Braille so they could do math on Braille writer and whatever for the vending program. And after they got in it, they'd keep calling back and they'd say,
Allison,
you need to get into this. You need to get into this. You'd be really good. Well, I finally kind of threw the back door thing. The instructor asked the guy who was over the vending thing, and he said, yeah, that he would, certify me if I could pass all the tests and whatever. So I would do it on my lunch hour and take off a hour every once in a while. I had to take leave for that. So anyway, I got my vending license and went to work in Nashville. I had a sub shop. It was a beautiful location, and I spent kubu of money on it, and it was a flop. And I thought it was just me that was a flop at first, but they finally closed it because nobody could ever make a profit there. It was in the Life and Casualty building, but there were just restaurants everywhere, within the block for people. And, of course, they wanted to get out of the building at lunchtime. So they were opening up some vending and a convenience store / game room at MTSU. And so they allowed me to temp those locations. Temp meaning you work there for 6 months and they're able to get the profit margin of it before they bid it out to, they say bid it out. I don't know why they call it bid, but anyway, people with seniority, and good rating, meaning they paid their fees, they were in good standing, were able to interview for it. And so Terry he was the director of blind service then. He said, save your money because you're going to make more in the next 6 months than you'll probably make in the next 3 to 6 years. And he was right. I did. When we got the vending numbers, then that was immediately taken up. And then I ran the convenience store. And I had 6 pool tables as well as game machines. And so then I was going to bid on it, but the night before a guy came in and he saw it and he was able to transfer right in. So I had no job. And so later on, that was in June, and I guess it was in September, that I went to Chattanooga and interviewed for a job. And they gave it to me then, but there was going to be an interview the following day in Nashville. And I said, can I give you an answer? Because I'd like to interview for the job in Nashville. Well, I didn't get the one in Nashville, and I ended up moving to Chattanooga. Both of my kids were in college and living in the dormitory. And things weren't that great at home anyway. But anyway, I took the job there, and I went home every other weekend. And then Blue Cross had moved in and took up about 8 floors of that building that TVA had contracted. And then they built their own building, or bought their own buildings, and moved out. And when they moved out, boy, did they move out. Blue Cross, they were in there shoulder to shoulder, and TVA may have 4 to 10 people in one whole wing. So then we kind of pieced something together in Chattanooga and took a location in Knoxville, which was not a good financial move, but I made a lot of friends there, and I really liked Knoxville. Well, so much about a condo there, and I thought I'd just stay, but I finally decided I had retired early, and I decided that I needed to move back home. So I moved back to Murfreesboro in 2007 and bought this little place in 2008. So I got back home where my family was. That answer your question or not?
Susie, tell us the one thing that you can remember that you got in the most trouble for growing up.
I know you'll find this hard to believe. Talking.
Elsa's laughing too. Susie, this is the one question all of us are very interested in and always love to ask. I love asking this question. How old were you when you got your first kiss? And do you remember who it was and where you were at?
Well, I thought about this, and I didn't know if you wanted a peck on the cheek or a real kiss. So, a real kiss, I was in the 8th grade, and it was in the practice room hall.
Ooh, everybody listen up. The practice hall. Ooh.
Oh, we all know about the practice room hall if you ever went to school at TSB. It was at the end of the hall.
Susie, what other hobbies do you have besides the piano?
Well, I guess you could call a hobby writing these puzzles for games that I do. I read a lot of books. I probably couldn't tell you what many of them are about because it's kind of my background noise. I enjoy naps. Spend way too much time on the computer. Do a lot of window shopping. Guess that's about it.
Susie, if you could change one thing in your life, what would it be and why?
I would have waited until I got out of college to get married. I wouldn't have married as young as I did.
Susie, who made the biggest impression on your life?
I think that would be my oldest brother, Charles. When my dad got hurt, he was already working, and he moved back home, and he just assumed the role of taking care of the family. You've heard of the big brother? Well, he is it. I would go, you know, to their house to do stuff, and he was always interested in how I looked. And I know when I started to college, I had said that I stayed home that year. Well, he wanted me to come and stay at their house that first week. So every morning when I would get ready, he was taking pictures of me before I, you know, headed out the door. And of course, you have freshman week. And I went to everything. You know, I'd come home in the afternoon and then get ready to go to whatever they were having freshman week, whether it was a concert or a dance or whatever it was. He didn't want me to miss anything. And then after I got married, of course, I wasn't living on campus anymore, and I had no idea how I was going to get to class because my husband worked swing shift. He worked a different shift every week. And he called me, and he told me, he said, "Don't worry about how you get to school, because Lillian," that's his wife, he said, "or I will come and pick you up and take you to school every morning after we drop the kids off." And then when I graduated, as I was coming down the steps, then they had it out on the football field, and I don't know, I think that stage they had it on, I really think it was a hay wagon with steps stuck on either end. But anyway, when I was coming down, I heard click, 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 click. He was standing at the bottom of the steps taking pictures when I came down the thing. And he's just always been there. Well, he's always been there for all of us, but he's just tops. And so, you know, my mother and my daddy and all of my family, you know, have been very instrumental. But if I had to say one, even with teachers and everything else, it'd be him.
Susie, that's a lot to be proud of. And I can understand in your description why he made the biggest impact on your life. Susie, if you could go anywhere in the world, where would it be and why?
Well, I'm not sure where it would go, but I would... I've been on a couple of cruises, and I just think they are the thing. And I'd like to go on a 12-day cruise on a nice ship.
It sounds good. You should plan one, and we'll all from VIP go with you. Wouldn't that be a hoot? Susie, there is a funny twist to your name. Tell us about that.
Well, Mom and Daddy had four boys, and they had always hoped for a girl. He even built me a yard fence to swing on before Dennis was born. But by the time I got on, he didn't really like me swinging on that fence, on that gate. But Mama asked him, said, "If we happen to have a girl this time, what are we going to name her?" And he said, "Well, I don't care, but I'm going to call her Susie." He called all little girls Susie. So I was Susie, S-U-S-I-E, until I was 10 and started school at School for the Blind. And then I was Susan. Well, I was Susan for years, except for, you know, family and people back home that call me Susie. And then I went to work at the rehab center in Smyrna. And the supervisor who called back, she said, "Well, we already have a Susan and a Sue, so we need to call you something else." And I said, "Well, just call me SP. "No, we don't want initials." And my mother happened to be at my house that day, and she was hearing all of this. And she said, "Well, tell them to call you Susie. I've got a television friend, and she spells hers S-U-Z-Y, and that's the way I want you to spell it." So that's the way I spell it now. So I was Susie, and then the students were really confused. One day, one of them came back, and he said, "Well," and at particular times, all three of us taught back in the independent living area, the kitchen, and he said, "I'm supposed to see Sue, Susan, Susie, I don't know who it is." And there was an older lady that was a client there at the time, sitting at the table. I can remember where she was sitting, and she always wore these cookie hats. And she said, "Well, I can solve that. We'll call Susie Barnes Susie B." And from that time on, Susie B just stuck. So I can tell what time in my life, I have known people depending on what they call me.
Well, that's a definite story about a name that is very interesting, that none of us probably could top that, Susie. And that's unique that you would be able to know the time in your life when you were called Susie, Susan, or Susie B. So that's pretty interesting. Susie, we need to kind of wrap it up here so we can open it up to the members so they can ask you a few questions. My last question of the evening from me is, when did you become a member of VIP, and how has VIP impacted your life?
Well, I think it was last year, but I don't know exactly. It hasn't been a long time. And the warmth of the members and the camaraderie here is just welcoming and relaxing, and it's just a great sight. And thank you for letting me be a part of it. And I'm sorry I've been so wordy.
This has been a very exciting and interesting interview, Susie. I have learned so much about you. I feel like I know more about who Susie B is than I ever did. And again, thank you so much for agreeing to be my VIP of the month for September. Okay, we're going to open up for questions from the members. If you would key up one at a time, please, and let Susie answer before the next person keys up. So who has a question for Susie?
It's not really a question, but Susie, talking to you, I just love to hear about all your stories, about your family, nieces, nephews, and I just want to thank you for being my friend.
All right. Anybody else have a question for Susie?
Well, mine's not really a question, but I just want to hook up with Susie later. I want to learn more about this. Is it practice hall or this hall where she got her first kiss? And I always enjoyed Susie's music. She's got the most relaxing piano music I think I've ever heard. Matter of fact, I have it recorded and listen to it when I go to sleep a lot of nights. And it really, really puts you out. But it's been a pleasure having you on the site, Susie. It's you know, you might say you talk a lot, but you know, I know a lot of people that talk quite a bit, and it kind of drives you up nuts sometimes, but for some reason, you can talk a lot, and it doesn't bother me. Always enjoy listening to you. Again, thanks for coming on.
All right. Anybody got a question they want to ask Susie? Well, hearing nothing, Susie, I guess everybody has learned what they want to hear about you. Again, Susie, thank you so much for agreeing to be my VIP for the month of September. And again, I feel like I have learned more about Susie B than I have ever known. And I am very glad to know you. You are a wonderful lady and a wonderful pianist, which I love to hear you play. Our VIP of the month for October will be our own Barry Jennings. And that will be on October the 28th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time here in the Village Square. So please mark it down on your calendar. And I always end my interviews with something special for my VIP. And this is Susie's selection. And again, Susie, thank you so much for being my VIP of the month.
Thank you, Teresa Rose. And thanks to all of you.
How sweet it is to be loved by you. How sweet it is to be loved by you. I needed the shelter of someone's arms. There you were. I needed someone to understand my ups and downs. There you were, with sweet love and devotion, deeply touching my emotion. I want to stop and thank you, baby. I want to stop.
Allison, 1 of 28.
Thank you, baby. Yes, I do.
Angela, only 1 of 27.
How sweet it is to be loved by you. Feels so fine. Sweet it is to be loved by you. I close my eyes at night, wondering where would I be without you in my life. Everything I did was just a bore. Everywhere I went, seems I've been there before. But you brighten up for me all of my days.
I just want to stop and thank you, baby. Just like sugar sometimes. How sweet it is to be loved by you. Whoa, yeah. Thank you, baby. Oh, yes.
How sweet it is to be loved by you. How sweet it is to be loved by you.
Oh, now.
How sweet it is to be loved by you.
It's like jelly, baby. Just like honey to the bee, babe.
This has been a presentation of VIP Conduit.